Blog Talk Radio.
General Quarters, Security Condition 3.
GQ, Security 3, sir. General Quarters 3, intruder alert. GQ 3, intruder alert.
I love that doorman, and I may have to loan him to my guest tonight if they need him, but he's a good man. Hey, this is Madam Perry, also known as Jennifer Perry, your host and cruise director for Madam Perry Salon. Thank you so much for being here and listening, and thank you so much for everybody that's been subscribing, whether it's on Blog Talk Radio, Apple iTunes, Stitcher, Podcast FM, subscriptions are up, and every day when I check the stats, so many of you are listening and listening to old episodes, too, that you download, and of course, it's no charge to download, and I really appreciate it because it makes me feel like I'm bringing you guests and bringing you stories and information and entertainment that you like and that you're interested in, and that's good. So keep telling me, keep listening. And if you want somebody you think that you'd like to hear on here, or even you, just give me a message or call here. I definitely appreciate it. Let's see. Last week, I've got to remind people, because I promised him I would. Last week we had Paul Myers, and he's a musician, a journalist from Canada, but he lived in England for a while, but he's in California now. But we talked about his three books. One was A Wizard, A True Star, about Todd Rundgren, and his history of being in the studio and the people whose records he produced outside of his own work as Todd Rundgren, solo artist in Utopia, Patti Smith, XTC, just a long list of people, as well as the other book was Bare Naked Ladies, Public Stunts and Private Stories, and that band, that was the first book he did about a band, and they asked him to write the book. And then there was one called It Ain't Easy, about Long John Baldry and the birth of the British blues. But Paul has a new book coming out in October, which you can pre-order. It's called One Dumb Guy, and it's about the Canadian comedy troupe, The Kids in the Hall. And I don't know if you watch that show, if you remember that show. I loved it. But The Kids in the Hall, but you can go ahead and, yeah, you can go ahead and pre-order that now for October. And let's see. Yeah, it was a very fun guest, very fun show. Also, we recently had Michael Fleeman again, true crime author. You see him a lot on shows like ID, Investigation Discovery, and Escape, and things like that. And this was about he was talking about his most recent book, Better Off Dead, about a love triangle in a pretty interesting neighborhood. And it has, I don't know, everything in it. I can't get over the thing about the swingers and the naked people on the zip line. That just sounds like a little too dangerous for me. But, hey, it's their neighborhood. So anyway, yeah, I always have fascinating people, and tonight is no exception, even though it's a little different from usual. You know, sometimes we get into a serious thing, and I am delighted, absolutely delighted, that most of you that listen know my dear friend, author and editor, Becky Kyle. And Becky suggested this show because I believe she's from Oklahoma, and if you're tuning in tonight, I know you know exactly what this is about. You know, so many people, I got to tell you, even recently, I saw a clip, I watched TV on YouTube, I saw a clip on YouTube recently where the comedian and talk show host Bill Maher said, you know, everybody knows, I admit, you know, I don't really, have any interest in kids. Even when I was a kid, I didn't care about other kids. He said, but I've got to tell you, this really gets me. He goes, I am so sick of seeing teachers have to buy, having to work extra jobs after school and on the weekends. And things where the students really get the raw end of the deal, the students and the teachers from all the government budget finagling and cuts and so forth. And yeah, you think about it. I don't think I know any teachers that that don't work another job. Very few. And also, I've been in restaurants where I'll have a server that says something like, "Yeah, well, my day job is a math teacher or something." So that's just not the way to treat people who have such a dedication to their job. So tonight we're going to talk about specifically the Oklahoma teachers' recent walkout, although the walkout has ended, but we're still going to talk about it tonight. And what can we really expect? What can they expect and the families expect, the children, the parents, going forward, if anything, what can they expect? And what should have been done differently? The two people I have on tonight with me to start off, and again, as I've said on all the social media, you know, you are welcome to join the conversation tonight. I don't care where you're from, what side you're on. Everyone is welcome to join the conversation as long as we're all civil amongst ourselves, speak civilly to one another. And so my first guest, and these people, it's their first time here in the genie bottle known as Madame Perry's Salon. And they haven't heard this yet, the story, but one of my first, in the beginning of the show, when it was just a blog, one of my first guests that was on went back and told the world, I've been to Madame Perry's Salon. It looks like the inside of Cheney's bottle. So after that way you'll know why it's a little dim in here and you're sitting on cushions. So I want to introduce, first of all, Belinda Crist. And Belinda is a teacher in Oklahoma. She's been teaching high school for 24 years, teaches English and art because she's an artist. And I think if you see some of the fantastic posters out there, hers are probably the most professional and creative and rather, although I've seen some rather imaginative ones, and I posted a few of them. And so, Belinda Crist, welcome to Madame Perry's Salon.
Well, thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
I'm delighted to have you here. I'm honored. And also in the room with us, I don't know if you know this fella, but he is a National Board Certified Social Studies teacher at Enid High School in Enid, Oklahoma, currently completing his 20th year of teaching. And of course, that's Mr. Matt Holtzman. Matt, welcome to Madame Perry's Salon.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to talk to you tonight about education in Oklahoma.
Well, I am delighted to have you here, both of you here. I don't know if you know each other. Belinda, meet Matt. Matt, meet Belinda.
Hi, Matt. Good to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
So, to start back, I guess we want to go back a little bit to where everything began. One of the articles that I was reading, it was talks about how it reached a point where suddenly the teachers just said, "Enough is enough," and that was it. And let me find my quote here. It's right behind you. It says, this was in the Together Oklahoma and by Sabine Brown. It said, and this was written on, published on April 17th, that's the day. So it says, 2 weeks ago, teachers, state employees, and supporters decided that they had had enough of overcrowded classrooms and the exodus of teachers to neighboring states, enough of state employees who are overworked and underpaid, enough of cuts to core services, putting our most vulnerable citizens at risk, and enough of refusing to invest in Oklahoma. 2 weeks ago, advocates across the state demanded better, and tens and thousands of people showed up at the Capitol to advocate for better funding. Teachers walked to the Capitol across the state, and citizens lined up to get in the building and talk to the legislators, many for the first time. So I think that's a pretty good introduction to where the straw broke.
Absolutely.
Belinda?
I think that is. We have had almost a 28% cut in education funding in the last 10 years, the majority of that coming in the last 3 to 4 years. And it's devastated school districts throughout the state. There are school districts that have four-day classes because they can't afford to have the school open on either Monday or Friday. So they actually have class only 4 days a week. There are
4 days
classes,
a week.
4 days a week. There are classes that have up to 50 people in a classroom because we have such a shortage. They have doubled up class size in cases. I've heard up to 50 people. I know personally of people who have, you know, who will have 36 to 40 kids in a classroom, have, you know, 30 desks and 3 extra chairs. And so you've got to get there early to get a chair. We've had to have it.
That should be embarrassing.
It is. Mm-hmm. It absolutely is. It shouldn't happen. But we've had so many emergency certifications. You know, we have such a shortage of teachers right now because if there are teachers going to the teacher colleges here in the state, they are not staying, and teachers who have been here for a while are leaving because you can cross any border and get at least a $5,000 raise. We have 6 borders of our state. You can cross any of them and get at least a $5,000-$6,000 raise. Then there are some places you can get a $20,000 raise. And so why stay here? Is no incentive to stay. And so because all of these teachers have been exiting, we've had to have emergency certifications. And people who have a degree and a pulse are suddenly teachers. And the degree can be in basket weaving or in you know, water technology or something. You know, it doesn't have to be anything that has anything to do with education.
Wow. That's and I would think that the government would be so, the Oklahoma, the legislature, the powers that be should be ashamed of this. But I don't know, maybe their kids go to private schools or something, so it's like it's not my kids, it's the other people's kids. Matt, what do you think about, I'm giving the same question to you, the description that I read from Together Oklahoma.
Well, I think teachers in general are a very tolerant and caring group of individuals. And 10 years ago when these cuts started to go into effect, teachers just, we're going to get through this, you know, I'm going to teach the kids that come into my classroom. But 10 years has been a very slow burn. It has reached a very critical point in schools across the state of Oklahoma where we are reducing not only teaching positions, but we're reducing course offerings, our fine arts, our music art programs, our foreign language programs have been gutted and decimated across the state because districts have had to make difficult choices on whether we need another science teacher or we need the Spanish teacher. Well, we have one already, so we can eliminate one of those positions and just eliminate some of our offerings. We've noticed in my school districts several years ago to save on costs, librarians, our library media specialists that serve such a vital role with especially our young readers, but even through our secondary schools, they've been reduced to being 5 days a week in one site to where they now have to split their time between multiple sites. So the kids in those different schools are not getting the services that they need all the state has continued to make cut after cut after cut. And then you see over the last 5 years, class sizes do dramatically increase, whether it's 38-year-olds or it's 30, 16-year-olds, 35 the next year, 37. In some of our classes, we are at 45, 50 kids, and that's too many regardless of the level. But
mm-hmm.
there's no other option for most of these districts in order to do that. And teachers are trying the best they can with what they've got, but every year it's less and less, but we have to do more and more.
Yeah, do more and more with less and less. And that brings wait a minute. I am just amazed. So when the budgets are cut, what do they tell you? Is there any kind of an excuse given, or is any, do they tell you where the money does go? I mean, I hear you laughing over there, Belinda. So tell me, what kind of baloney are they flinging at you?
Well, the state has we have a very fiscally conservative legislature. And they have decided in their wisdom to reduce taxes. And so for a number of years, taxes were reduced. I believe it was starting at 7%. And they reduced 0.5% a year until they hit 5%. That's our income tax. Income tax is 5%. And that's it. You know, then on top of that, our gross production tax for our one of our biggest industries, which is our oil and gas industry, gross production tax has been held at less than 3% for decades. And other states have increased their gross production tax. And Oklahoma's mm-hmm. just held it down, held it down, held it down. The oil and gas industry in Oklahoma has amazing clout, and
mm-hmm.
they will fight tooth and nail to have those wonderful perks maintained. So they have that one of the things that they did pass this time was. In some of the money, the some of the funding that we won in the walkout was an increase of gross production tax from, I think it was 2.3, and it's going up to 5%.
Mm-hmm.
It is still one of the lowest gross production tax amounts in the nation, and that so basically. The oil and gas industry is, you know, they are paying politicians. Well, they don't pay the politicians, but they put money in their PACs and, you know, get them elected. And then when the politicians get there, they're beholden to them. I do know that the day after the bill to increase the gross production tax was introduced in the legislature this year, the one of the oil and gas producers, what do they call it, the political action committee, so their little PAC.
Political action committee?
Got together.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. They got together and had a big old barbecue on the lawn of the Capitol building and invited all of the senators and representatives to come on down and have barbecue. So they were, you know, fighting it right there the minute it was introduced. And we have subsidies for the wind industry. We have, you know, there it seems like any kind of industry gets a subsidy. But at the same time, every state agency had to take cuts. So highway patrolmen can't gas up their cars as frequently as they need to. So their mileage has been cut down. and they've closed homes for people who are mentally and physically challenged. They've closed down programs that allow people who have independent living needs. They've closed down programs for them. So there are cuts that have happened across the board. We are not the only ones taking these cuts. Every department has taken these cuts except corrections, and even they don't get any increases. And so, I mean, it really is. It's a disaster.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like it's pretty much everybody be damned but them, you know, just as long as they get the graft and the gravy or whatever. And by the way, if you're listening live, I want you to know that here on Madam Perry Salon, we're talking about the Oklahoma teacher walkout. It's over, but, you know, what happens now, or if it, does anything happen now, and what does this mean? And if you would like to join the conversation, you're certainly welcome. The number to call is 646-716-9922. It's 646-716-9922. It's a toll-free number in the continental U.S. And, yeah, I've got some people that are about to call in, so stay with me just a minute. I wanted to say that I was reading a book about a year ago, and this is what I'm thinking about. And, Matt, you know, you may want to start with this. I don't know, be the first to answer this or discuss it, or Belinda. But about a year or so ago, I read a book by author Nicholson Baker, called Substitute. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's called Substitute, Going to School with 1,000 Kids. And it's where he took about a year and worked as a substitute teacher. And so the whole book is about, you know, what an eye-opener it was to him. And he lives in Maine. And what an eye-opener to him about what it was like, how the classes were, but also about how one of the things he talked about, and I guess this is something that happens everywhere, there are a lot of kids there that, you know, would have some way on a bus and come and, you know, get up really early, come a very long way, and they'd be sleepy in class, or maybe they were on certain medical, and then maybe they were on the wrong, even lethargic, or maybe someone hyperactive, so they had teachers, you know, I guess with paraprofessionals, or they called them tech help, but aides in the class to help out. And I would imagine that's something, there were some things like that, I'm sure, in every school these days. So you're going through all that, too. I mean, stop me if I'm off track here. But reading that book with him and knowing the teachers that I know, and you've got even fewer resources for situations like that, for dealing with kids that do have a need like that. Maybe not a severe special need, but they need a little extra, a little different attention.
Well, if I can talk about that a little bit, I think there is a perception in a lot of people's minds about what schools are like and what it is to be a teacher. And the kids that come into our classroom, those problems that you addressed and so many more that we don't know about, but the school is the place that is safe for them, and the school is the place that they are expected to have those needs met. And you're talking about cuts to mental health. You're talking about cuts to protective services to get our kids who are in abusive households out and into a safe place. Those agencies have been cut. And so it's not just a cut to various different programs, but these are our kids. These are our kids in need of these services. And this is something that adds then to the myriad of issues we're facing within the classroom of trying to meet these kids where they're at when they come into our classes and trying to provide them with an education, but also with that physical health support, mental health support, and learning support that they're going to need, which just becomes difficult when you have a class of 35 students and you have 10 of them that are limited language learners. English is not their native language. You have another 10 mm-hmm. that are in need of educational support. They have a disability of some type. And so making modifications to try and meet the needs of those students. And then you have other students who have things going on in their life that you don't even know about, but you see the student act out in the classroom, which makes it so much more challenging to try and meet the needs of those 35 kids in a 50-minute period when there are so many obstacles in the way the state continues to remove resources.
I think also one of the things that we see is, you know, in my district or in my school, not in my district, but my school has about 85% of our kids are free or reduced lunch, which means that they live at the poverty level or lower. And so there are tremendous things that happen in their lives that affect them and affect the way they learn. If you're hungry, you're not worried about learning, you know, who the first president was. If you are worried about whether or not you're going to have a place to sleep tonight, you're not worried mm-hmm. about whether or not you can figure out this math problem. If the mm-hmm. electricity was shut off, if, you know, you don't have lights at the home, if your heat was shut off, you'd never know what these kids are facing. But so many of our kids in my school are living on the edge poverty-wise. And so we become their safe haven. Our district this year got a grant to feed all children for free at all district schools so that everybody gets breakfast and they get lunch. And immediately before they go home, we give them second lunch so that they can have something in their tummies when they go home. Over the weekend, we give them, you know, backpacks full of food, the ones we need. And we hand them backpacks full of food and send them home with that. So we become the special services that they need. And I think a lot of people don't realize school does that used to be part of other community service entities. And we have become like the central location for everything.
You know, it's just sort of like it just gets, everything I hear just gets worse and worse and worse. I mean, I've heard, now I'm, as if you couldn't tell, I live in Atlanta and always have. And I know here there's always the big thing that parents get the list every year to what they have to bring, provide at the beginning of the year, like maybe two rolls of paper towels, some hand sanitizer, some pencils. They get a whole list of things they have to send to the school with a child the first day. And then when you talk about food insecurity, my mother a few years ago retired from, she wasn't a teacher, she drove a special ed bus in DeKalb County, Georgia. Uh-huh. And, you know, with special ed, you know, you go to specific houses with specific children. It's not just, you know, a lot of it at the stop. And I remember her, she would, you know, they don't spend a lot of money in that job, but she would just go, she just loved those kids, but she would get her, she would get these little cartons of milk and maybe something like some cinnamon rolls or something so she could give them all something in the morning because, you know, they would come on so hungry. And I know other people this way too, but, you know, Southern women, we love to feed people, but these kids were really hungry. So, you know, I remember her doing that. And, but I guess one thing that gets to me is I keep thinking, you know, where is the shame? I would think that there people should be, the government, the legislature should be ashamed, and there just seems to be absolutely no embarrassment. And for Pete's sake, Oklahoma teachers have been on all the major news outlets, and these days everything that goes out it's spread, you know, it's everywhere. And I would think that with everything, with all the school, you know, I think it was, what was it, Virginia, Oklahoma, I would think that somebody would be ashamed enough or embarrassed enough to make a difference, but apparently they go back in their ivory towers. And right now I have a call from another Georgian, and this is Duffy. Duffy, hi, you're on Madame Perry's Salon, and we're talking to Matt Holzen and Belinda Christ. And just come on in.
Hello, Belinda and Matt. I can't really hear the show over the phone. I'll turn it up on my
Duffy, hi,
computer.
But
there is a delay. But I'll give you my question, and then I'll
Belinda,
and then I'll listen back on the computer. I'm old enough to remember the Little Rock Nine, and also being in Georgia, being in the Deep South, I remember the problems with George Wallace and segregation of schools in Alabama. And since then, you realize that so much of these problems have to do with educators and students having to fight political battles and having to fight with local and even sometimes national governments. And we still have the problems now that with the things that have gone on in Charleston and other places with the and with the school shootings as well, and people fighting to make sure schools are safe. What have you learned about how to get things across to politicians, and also what have you accomplished? Have you been able to are you going to be able to get the textbooks you need and the repairs to things like your crumbling ceilings and the enough classrooms and enough teachers for the large classes that you have to deal with, and the four-day school week as well? It seems like most of what you're asking for are for the students and not for yourselves, except for the four-day school week, which is stressful to you and also reflects on the students.
That is a great question, and I think you have really hit on a lot of the issues that face teachers. You asked, what have we gotten so far? You're alluding to this walkout and things that were going on. This walkout lasted 2 weeks. In that two-week window, we got nearly $500 million dedicated to education funding for the next school year. There was about a $500 million ask of our first year of a three-year plan to fully fund our schools, and part of that process started a week before the walkout. However, none of that legislation had been signed by our governor, and there was no guarantee things would be signed. The walkout began. Teachers, parents, community members showed up en masse and made it personal to the legislators to have a parent talk about what their elementary school kid has to experience on a daily basis in an overcrowded school, or to hear that special ed teacher who talks about how they're getting a large number of referrals because class sizes are so large that teachers are saying these kids have needs that can't be met. It's because it's an overcrowded classroom. And so we're going to see more money coming into the classrooms next year, and some of that money is going to force the state to enact and reimpose some of the regulations we had concerning class size, concerning library media specialists, concerning textbooks. You know, we started off with looking at how education funding per student has been cut over time, we put a little bit of money back. Is it where we want it to be? Absolutely not. But it's more money next year than what we had this year. So it's continually working to move forward. And that's really been a payoff of this walkout. Is it has opened parents, students, and lawmakers' eyes as to what's going on in the classrooms within their communities.
I think that's very true, Matt. Thank you for saying that. Something that I'd like to kind of touch on as well, that $500 million that we got into commit, a lot of that is in the form of a pay raise for teachers. We had not had a pay raise in 10 years. And so a lot of that is dedicated to our pay raise, which is, you know, don't get me wrong, it's a wonderful thing. And it's important because the only way we're going to get and retain really quality teachers is by competitively paying them. But as far as the per student items, the amount of funding that we got is less than $100 per student for replacing textbooks. It's of the $500 million, the amount that is actually going to be dedicated to students is less than $100 per student. And so it's just a drop in the bucket. This is a three-year plan. We do plan to continue our activism. And in fact, the teacher walkout has concluded, but there are other things that are continuing. First of all, the highest number of teachers ever to sign up to run for candidacy for the legislature just happened. It was during the window to sign up for to run for, you know, for to become a senator or a representative was that week when we were out and at the Capitol. And so people were walking from the lines where they were out front walking against, you know, to walk for our students. They would walk into the Capitol building and go to the election board and sign up. And so we have a record number of teachers who are running for office this year. And we'll find out in...
Wonderful.
Yes, it's wonderful. It is wonderful. Because one of the reasons teachers don't run for office is because they have to give up their careers. Our legislature is a part-time legislature, and it is in one of the requirements is that if you are in the legislature, you cannot be a teacher actively teaching because you would be away for 3 months at least. And so they say you cannot be a teacher and be a legislator. Now, the legislators make almost as much as the teachers do in that 3 months, but that's another story. We still have people at the Capitol marching. Now it has been taken over by parents and the community leaders and the business leaders. They are down there marching. Many districts are allowing certain numbers of their teachers to go down like once a week. And so I know the Oklahoma City District, which is the district I work for, is allowing members of the staff to go down. And they're trying to figure out a way to send people every day, a few people from every, you know, from a school or from different schools every day so that we stay in front of their faces. Now, we hope that in November there's a huge turnover. That's one thing that we're hoping for, that we get a more education-friendly legislature. But then also one of the problems is that we have a legislative one of the rules that is in place is that in order for any funding bill to pass, for any tax increases to happen, you have to have 3/4, 75% of the legislators support it. And that supermajority is almost impossible to meet. And so, because you have to have 75% in order to pass any increases in tax, in taxation, one of the things that we are advocating for, or that many people in the education field are advocating for, is a changing of that rule and a lowering of the percentage that is required. It's a pretty high bar, and it's higher than the bar on a national level. And so it seems a little excessive, but that is the that is the way it stands right now. And so there is some hope that if we get a change in legislative makeup, that maybe there will be a change in the rules, which will allow funding to be easier to pass. It's a 3-year plan, so we're working.
I had also invited Craig Hoxie. I don't know if I think this is his name, H-O-X-I-E. I found him on Twitter. And do you know him, Belinda or Matt?
I do not.
No, I don't.
Yeah. Okay, well, anyways, so he's a teacher who says he is running for House District 23, I see. Is it Hoxie for House District 23? I invited him. Yeah, because he's got all these pictures on his Twitter, and he's with his application, and he said, well, because you can't ask someone to do something that you aren't willing to do, so I'll see you at the Capitol tomorrow. That's what he wrote on the 12th, and I invited him to be on tonight. He says, thank you. I would love to do it another time, but tonight I got too many meetings. I'm thinking, okay, well, this man's working it. He's out there. He's on Twitter at HoaxyCR, and but it's but also he just he retweeted a post from the Pastors for Oklahoma Kids, and it says they said a movement was launched: teachers, parents, grandparents, tutors, students, attorneys, pastors, advocates, business leaders. You, and that's a capital Y-O-U, you started something big. So remember, register and vote. All right.
And I think that has been the most profound and important impacts of this entire movement. It is, the walkout was never intended to be the final option to get funding. It was one of many strategies that are going to be used. But I was down at the Capitol during this walkout for those 2 weeks, and the one thing I continued to hear from people, teachers, parents coming in and out of that building, is, I had no idea that's what it is. Now that I know, I'm going to do something about it. And a sense of organization and activism has swept across this state. And you see alliances like the Pastoral Alliance working with teachers, working with other community groups, saying that we have a common goal and we need to do something about it. And so meetings are taking place, even in small rural communities in Oklahoma, where people say, this isn't good enough for our kids. And they have been moved to action. And that is really probably one of the greatest things that comes out of this, is that people are aware and are motivated to do something about it.
And I think, too, another thing that's happened as well is that people on both sides of the aisle have seen it.
Yes.
You know, it's become something that crosses party lines. It's become something that everybody sees, that this is an emergency and that we need to do something about it. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's fair to say that most people were fairly disappointed when it was announced by the spearhead organization, which is the OEA. They were our spearhead organization when they announced that the walkout was going to end, because the legislative leaders that they had been talking to said, you're not getting anything else. And it does make sense that if you're told you are not getting anything else, that we have to just kind of take what we got and go back to the classroom. But at the same time, I think the fire is lit. I think we are woke, as they say. And I think most Oklahomans are woke. So I think there's a huge sweep that is going to happen across this state. And that sweep is going to be, I don't care who the candidate is. I don't care what party they are running in. If they are not education friendly, they are not going to be elected.
Yeah, and I think
that's where it is. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I think that also addresses that earlier question you posed about why are legislators allowing that to happen? Where's the shame? And there's only shame if you acknowledge that it's a problem. I've been to several meetings with legislators, legislator forums, and the response when they are asked about why have you cut education so much and what are you going to do about it is, legislators have said, well, we haven't cut that. We've put more money into education without taking into account the number of students have increased greater than the amount of money that comes in. So it isn't more. And it's the legislators like that who are drawing those opponents and going to be drawing that opposition and getting a lot of pushback back in their home district from people who said, that's not good enough. We need better.
Uh-huh.
And so we're going to see, hopefully, a lot of change as this momentum continues to grow.
And of course, you know, if you really want to get stuff fired up, get information going around, it's always good to have a celebrity involved, just like the first grader that found out she had Blake Shelton's old cookbook. I mean, a classroom book. What was it for?
Right.
Yeah, 7-year-old Marley Parker was in for a treat when she opened up her book and it had Blake Shelton inside. You know, you got a celebrity in it. It really takes off. It gets a lot more power behind it. And that should also heighten the embarrassment. But let me ask you this. So do you see, even though everybody's back in the classroom, does the fact that so many people are, so many educators are stepping up to run for office and people are getting more involved, does it really give you a lot of hope? Because I was thinking that you guys have got the momentum on such an upward swing, and it looks to me like, and I don't have any sample information to verify this, but just empirically it looks to me as though I don't think it really seems to bother anybody out there what, like you said, what side you're on politically. They're all parents and they're all teachers. And what matters to you is the students and the class. You don't care where, what you believe, what do you feel. Let's put them first.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I always tell people that I don't care what career you choose, what you go into as a profession. The one thing we will always have in common is we are citizens. And we owe it to the kids in our classes to give them the best opportunity at an education so that they can grow and prosper and do even better for the next generation.
Absolutely.
You know, even last night I was talking to Belinda, and when you were talking about, Belinda, about the gas and oil industry and all that, and I just thought, you know, it's almost like, well, maybe you could just what, sponsor a school, like you sponsor a race car driver or something, and at least if their name is on it, they'll come through with some money. Okay, you gotta have a, you know, you gotta have some
Exxon
gas,
Mobil High School,
you know.
Oklahoma.
Because you and
they
don't want
the stadium,
they don't want the
bad, why not?
Yeah, they don't want them to say something like, "Oh, Exxon Valdez, you know who? So who was running this one? You know, Captain Hazelwood, Exxon Valdez High School is just kind of slacking there." So,
yeah,
I don't know.
one thing I noticed about this movement, I'll call it a movement, that is an actual model for our time. Nothing is going to happen for a while on a national level to cure everybody's problems with education. I don't know if you agree with who we have in the Department of Education right now, but I've watched her, and I think she might be better off somewhere else. But the thing is that I'm not far from Tallahassee, and I saw the kids. I saw the kids assemble, and there was still arguments going on back and forth what to do to keep kids safe. And that's going to go on and on. But the politicians were not threatened by that. They will be when these kids get older and start voting, but they aren't threatened immediately. And what threatens people immediately is a loss of services, in the same way that in Memphis, when the garbage workers went on strike, and when people went on strike in New York, when people lose their services, when their kids aren't being taught, it's got to happen on a local and state level, and they have to be threatened. They have to know that something is coming to a standstill, and people are not going to be, and we're not going to move unless something is done about it. So, I think people all over should be listening to this, because this is the way things have to be done right now for our time, is to have things done on a local level where politicians see the threat in front of them and have to take action right now, or they're going to lose. They're going to lose out. And I have to commend you all for what you've done, and I hope people are watching and listening so that more changes can be made all over the country. We're in a very strange time politically, and a lot of people don't know what to do, and this is one of the things that can be done that works.
Mm-hmm. This is something I completely agree with you, that this is something that we don't really think about. But politics, the politics that is closest to us, is the politics that affect us more than anything else. So it is more important to get involved on a local level than on a national level. The things that happen in Washington don't have nearly as much effect on our lives directly.
Not anymore. They don't. No.
And so we have to grab that idea that we can change things locally. It's much more difficult to change things nationally. And I think that one thing that we have seen in the last few months is a real awakening of the spirit of the teenage advocate. And, you know, whether they're advocating for gun control or here in Oklahoma, we had hundreds of kids who came to the Capitol, and they went into the offices and they spoke to the senators. They spoke to the representatives, and some of them were treated with derision and were dismissed. You know, you don't understand. You don't know how it is. These kids are within a breath of voting. And we are going to see a huge wave of active and engaged young people who will be voting very shortly. It's going to be time for changes.
This is democracy in action.
It absolutely is.
Yeah, they're getting a live lesson right there. You know, I was looking at there was an article on CNN that's about the teachers there that are running for office, and I want to quote here. It says the number of teachers vowing to run for office was one sign of the walkout success, said Kelly Craig, a fifth grade teacher in Oklahoma City. While it's disheartening that the walkout ended, the walkout forced change that Oklahomans will see this November, she said. Without the walkout, this wouldn't have occurred. And so what I'm thinking, I just want to see how many of these people, you know, how that turns out, how the elections go. And I am hoping that come November that I would love Belinda and Matt to have you both come back and bring a couple of friends and talk more about what's happened from now until then, if you would.
Absolutely.
That would be great. Yay. Okay.
Yay.
Yeah, because I think that we're seeing the movement. We're seeing the momentum. You're making it happen. You shouldn't have to be doing it, but the students are seeing it. And, yes, like you said, this democracy in action, and they're getting a live lesson for it. Matt, do you have any parting words? And then after you, Belinda, before we go, or anything you want to say to the parents or legislators or anyone?
I just encourage everybody to continue to ask questions, to get involved, find out what it is that you can do at a local level that will help continue to move this movement forward.
All right, great. Belinda?
I think that everybody has really shown us the spirit that we expect from Oklahomans, but we still need to do more. We can't forget this. We need to stay active. We need to find candidates that we can support. We need to actually do something. Don't just say, I support this candidate. Get out and work for them. Figure out what you can do to help your candidate get elected. And just keep it rolling.
Keep it rolling. That's right. Keep it rolling. Keep it in the lane. Keep it moving. And I definitely want you, again, Matt Holson and Belinda Crist, thank you both so much for being my guest. To everyone who's listening and saying that they're listening at home and saying, you know, they're cheering for you. They're sending me messages on Facebook saying that they're right behind you and they're proud of you and impressed by you. And I do hope you will both come back in November. Let's talk again about what's happened by then. And Duffy Odom, thank you for calling. And this is Madam Perry. Remember, tomorrow night, my guest is Kathleen O'Keefe Canavas. I met her at Book Expo years ago in New York. She's been on Dr. Oz talking about her books about diagnosing your health problems through dreams, and she'll be here tomorrow night. So if you wanted to, with her new book, so if you want her to interpret your dreams, give a call tomorrow night. Duffy, Belinda, Matt, call in with your dreams tomorrow night. And and remember, folks, as I always say, everybody's got to swing. Madam Perry loves you. Good night.
Everybody's got to swing. But mom and pop were right on time. They helped up all your nursery rhymes. But when you started Vibe.